Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio and Joe DiBiase. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, rolling along here on draft day 2024, the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Joe, when I was going through some of the scenarios for a trade up and you know what it would cost, and I kept saying, no third rounder, no third rounder. And I kept getting to, well, they'd have to go up next year's second rounder. That second rounder next year is really interesting because maybe the Bills trade it tonight and they use it to move up. But also, we're really going to root hard against the Minnesota Vikings in Buffalo this year. I mean, if the Vikings are bad, like that pick could be in the mid-30s.
Yeah. It will be probably in the top 10, right? Well, you never know, though. There are times where you think a team's going to be bad, and then they end up being a little bit better than you thought.
Like the Texans last year, by the way.
Yeah. The Cardinals probably, or not the Cardinals. The Cardinals. They had the Texans first-round pick, don't they? They probably thought they were getting like a top five pick when they did that, and then it ended up being like in the 20s.
Yeah, that's right. What's Arizona got? 4 and then 27. Right. All right, we're going to welcome in now our good buddy Emery Hunt on the Wester Hotline, of course, CBS Sports, CBS Sports HQ. He's got his draft guide out. We talk with you before the draft, during the draft process, and here we are the day of the draft, Emery. Thanks for coming on. It's Sal and Joe here in Buffalo again.
Appreciate you guys always bringing me on, man.
Yeah, you got it. Listen, I mean, I cover the NFL every day for a living. I follow a certain team. I'm on the radio every day. I'm a beat reporter. I'm on the sidelines, but specifically for the Buffalo Bills. You kind of do it, you know, all-encompassing, and the draft is kind of your thing. It's been your thing for a long time. So for a guy like me, so laser-focused on the Bills, it's one thing. But what's it like for you to get to this day? What is today like for you and the culmination of what the last year has been?
You know, what's interesting, as you asked that great question, it's kind of like, you know, today really is the start. But for someone like myself that dives deeper into the draft, really I get excited about day two and day three because that's where your team is made. That's where the real scouting happens. Right now I feel like day one is all pop and circumstance. You know, it's just kind of like we have a general idea of what's going to happen, who's going to be selected. There's not a lot of surprise this year, and there hasn't been a lot of intrigue, to be completely honest, about what's going to happen at the top. We kind of have an idea, but for someone like myself, it's really about days two and three and that quote-unquote eighth round that really happens after the draft ends, when the chaos happens with the undrafted free agents.
Well, I was looking at some of your stuff, and we always refer to and think about that 2018 draft, and I know you liked Lamar Jackson above all the other quarterbacks, and here he is, a two-time MVP. And you've never been afraid, never been shy to say you like a guy. I think last year you had Jahmyr Gibbs over, Bijan Robinson, if I remember correctly. And then this year, it's Rome Odunze over the top receivers, right? I mean, you can correct me on all of that, but I believe that's where you've landed. That's why I think it's fascinating to talk to you because you take a look at it from a different perspective. You're not going to be swayed by what other people think. What's your feelings on Rome Odunze and why you have him rated so highly?
You know, you're right on all aspects, but with the receiver, it's always unique because Rome Odunze is my number one X, and my number one Z receiver is Malik Nabers. Now, okay. My number one slot is Ladd McConkey. And when you look down at my number two, I had my number two Z is Keon Coleman. My number three Z is Marvin Harrison Jr. Now, here's the thing. People will say that and say you hate Marvin Harrison Jr., but I have Pro Bowl grades on all of those guys. A.D. Mitchell is my number two X, Pro Bowl grade on him, as well as on Xavier Worthy. So, to me, I look at it like this class is so elite to where you can get a guy that can help your team out significantly as a rookie. But for Odunze, why he's topped out as my X, my number one X, is the fact that everything he does is just so smooth and easy. And that's an extreme level of confidence. It's an extreme level of skill. And it just jumps out at you on tape. So when you talk about guys like that, or like you brought up Lamar Jackson or Jahmyr Gibbs, when I look at those type guys, I see those guys as not being scheme-dependent or team-dependent. You could drop them anywhere, and they'll perform.
In terms of where the Bills would have to be coming from, is he, given what you just said about him, if Odunze is there at 9 or 10, is he that good to you where he's worth like multiple first-round pick and maybe even more than that type of trade-up?
Listen, and this is going to sound weird to say for someone that had a two-time MVP as his number one overall quarterback in 2018, but no one player is that good. I'm not giving up that much to go get one dude when you need 53 to really win. Especially in this class where I just outlined a bunch of good receivers, yeah, I like Odunze. He's nice. He's my number one next. But I'd be damned if I give up future assets to go up and get one dude when we need multiple on a football team.
Even with a team with a ready-made quarterback who's, you know, fighting for an MVP every year in a Super Bowl window, who just needs that X receiver who's ready, you know, right there with the Kansas City Chiefs, basically. Even for a team like that, you think it's just way too much to do?
Only if your roster looks like the Cleveland Browns, where else are you going to put guys on the roster? Their depth chart is stacked within the two deep. There's really no room, right? Buffalo has a lot of room to add guys. So if I can get two talented wide receivers that can help me out, maybe I could double up and get back into round one and select two receivers at the back end of round one, as opposed to trading up those assets to go get one. Because I feel like the Bills can use multiple receivers, so I wouldn't want to give up a chance, especially in this draft class, to go and get one dude.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead, Joe.
You just mentioned you had A.D. Mitchell as your number two X receiver. He is the player that is the most mocked to the Bills. If he is the pick, or I guess just in general, him as a prospect, like what you see from him on tape, how he measured, and also how much attention do you pay to, there's just questions, right, about Mitchell that are out there about like effort stuff, and I don't know, like there just seems to be a lot of noise, like extra noise when it comes to his evaluation.
You know, I block out all that and just focus on the film. And the film tells me he's a lot like CeeDee Lamb, where he doesn't have to only win deep down the field. You can throw him a football on a hitch route. He could turn around and make things happen after the catch. And he's looking to score the ball when he has it in his hands. And you know, me and my homeboys, my former college teammates, we have a group chat going, and we kind of like laugh at certain things where if we're watching the game collectively – and we see the quarterback is the issue, he's like, man, I would have hate to have played for this dude because, man, we would have had to fight in the huddle. And that's what you saw on film for A.D. Mitchell. A lot of times he's open. It's not his fault he can't get the football. And one thing I always wanted to point out with him was in that game against Washington, you saw one play where he was open, and it was a crucial situation inside the red zone, and he's looking back to the sideline like, hey, man, get me the football. Like, I'm open. Throw it to me. The next play they go to him, touchdown. That's the type of guy you want out there, and that's the type of controlled aggressiveness you want. Someone that understands, hey, I got this dude beat like a drum. Get me the football, and let's try to tie this game or take the lead. And it's that type of leadership, kind of like Dez Bryant was. You know, he's calling for the football because he knows he has the matchup and he has it won. And I feel like A.D. Mitchell has that same type of mindset that I could live with.
Every time I think about wide receivers, I think about Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott talking about explosive plays, rack, guys with balls in the ball in their hands, what they can do. Sean McDermott talked a lot about the game has changed. You need guys who can be explosive from anywhere on the field, not just over the top. And that's why in my mock, without trades, I have Xavier Worthy going to the Bills at 28, Brian Thomas Jr. off the board already. but there are questions about his size. How do you see it? 165 pounds, but obviously a dynamic guy who broke the combine record in the 40.
Well, listen, you know me. Size is not a skill, and you can't hit what you can't catch. You can't hurt what you can't touch. You know, if you're that fast, you got to catch me first before you can hurt me. And someone like Worthy does a great job of winning deep down the field. I saw a comp earlier today that I kind of agree with and makes a lot of sense. It was like T.Y. Hilton, similar stature. And if weight is the biggest concern, like, listen, we can add weight on you. We can get you big. You know, that's not a problem. And I like the fact that he has gotten better this year as opposed to last year. Last year, I was like, wow, he's kind of a liability out there, especially against Alabama. In the Alabama game, we had those crucial drops. But this year against Alabama, he was able to right some wrongs. He became much more consistent catching the football. So it shows you it was a focal point for him in the offseason. He worked on it, got better, became more of an asset and not a liability. So the size doesn't worry me because you can put him out in space. You can put him on the move. You can keep him off the line of scrimmage and create those explosive plays for him. And I think he's going to be a fantastic receiver, whether you want him on the inside as a slot or as a Z receiver where you kind of can put him on the move.
When it comes to the other receivers that are more fringe, like late first, early second, the Leggett territory, Franklin, others, is there another name that you think could sneak into the first round?
Troy Franklin, I mean, the explosiveness and the first step quickness reminds me so much of a Ted Ginn and how he's able just to explode off the ball. And what I like about Franklin is the fact that he's another one that tracks the ball rather well. So you think about pairing him up with those space bombs that Josh Allen likes to throw, you really can't outthrow Troy Franklin because he's going to track without losing speed, puts his hands up at the last possible moment to make the grab. And so that's someone that would pair up perfectly with the Josh Allen. You brought up Brian Thomas. You know, I would love to see him in Buffalo because he's a big body guy that not only can win deep down the field and above the rim, we know that, but he's an underrated rack guy as well. You saw a lot of times we talk about neighbors and how well he was able to catch and run with the football. Thomas was just like that. A lot of times you see him on a low crosser and he's weaving through the defense and getting to the end zone. So those two guys to me would be ideal fits in Buffalo.
Emory Hunt joining us here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. All right, believe it or not, the Bills might actually take somebody other than a wide receiver, although that's all we've been focused on here for the last few months. If that happens, it's probably, you're looking at edge, maybe interior defensive line, probably the likely two spots there. So let's talk about the edge, the guys you like. It doesn't seem to be a really deep class, but there's some nice guys at the top. Who would fit maybe down at 28 for the Bills that you would like to kind of see there if that's the case?
Well, if the NFL draft is doing the draft right, and I assume, you know, guys like Leatu Latu would be gone, Jared Verse would be gone, Dallas Turner would be gone. So now you're talking about, okay, the next tier of guy. I'm a big Jonah Ellis guy out of Utah. You can always sell me on, you know, defensive players coming from Utah, sight unseen. I don't care what their tape looks like. They're well-coached. They're good football players. You kind of want them on your defense. So he would be someone that I really just would love his game in Buffalo because every time I watched him play, he was just it's almost like he was offsides with how often he was in the backfield. I know he's not a first-round pick, potentially, but Mo Kamara out of Colorado State is another one of those type of guys like Ellis where even if you had him as a situational rusher, hey, go in there and just get to the quarterback, that's what he does extremely well, was extremely disruptive on film. And Chris Braswell is a power rusher, but man, that and he's kind of one-dimensional as a rusher, but man, that one dimension is really doggone good because he has a long arm stab where he's walking offensive linemen back into the pocket and is able to close on the ball. It's almost like he's out there by himself and just a quarterback because he sees no trash. He sees no bodies. He is like RoboCop. He is a razor-sharp focus on his target, and he's going to get to that target.
What about at the safety position? The class isn't seen as a great one, but the Bills do have, I would even say, a long-term need. They could definitely draft a rookie and start him, I think, too. But what do you think the prospects look of that hypothetical for them?
And let me piggyback on that. Do you see Cooper DeJean as a safety in the NFL? Because it seems like that's kind of the guy that plays the way he does that the Bills would love.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You think about what the Bills had with Micah Hyde and what they, you know, had in Poyer. All of those guys are kind of crossover type guys, right? Where you could, they start at corner, then they'll move to the slot, then they'll end up being playing safety. So it kind of fits the mold of what they like. For Cooper DeJean, I'm kind of like, listen, man, I'm going to let you play corner until you prove you can't play corner. And until that happens, then we'll just leave you out there. But if it happens, then, hey, okay, we'll move you around the defense to utilize your football IQ. But safety, I think this is a good class for, you know, guys that could do more than one thing. We're kind of seeing that now. I feel like this year it was harder for me to really designate free safety, strong safety, combo safety, because I feel like all of them are starting to blend together now to where it's not clear-cut and defined on, okay, this guy's only a free safety, only a strong safety, so on and so forth. So you look at someone like Marcus Banks out of Mississippi State, who was a starting safety for the Bulldogs, but can play corner as well, can kick down in the slot. Thomas Harper out of Notre Dame, about 5'10", 180, can do both those things as well, but very good versus the run. Small school guy to keep an eye on, P.J. Jules of Southern Illinois. Terrific trigger off the short corner, can blitz, can cover. And I know Saron Neal had a nice little career in Buffalo. How about we go back to Jacksonville State and look at Kobe Fuqua? He's a little bit older. He's a 25-year-old rookie, but this is someone that can play dime backer, strong safety. He can blitz, he can cover, has great football instincts, and has the ball skills to turn the ball over in the passing game.
Yeah, it's funny. Speaking of being a little bit older, and I know you're a big small school guy, how about Jared Verse from SUNY Albany to Florida State to the NFL in the first round?
Oh, listen, that's funny because he also played at Bloomsburg, if I'm not mistaken. Or there was another guy that played at Bloomsburg, just passed away, A.J. Simon, I'm sorry. He went from Bloomsburg to UAlbany. But, yeah, UAlbany. And listen, Anton Kunjaj was the other end at SUNY Albany, and just transferred out to G5 program. So what's going on up there at Albany? Shout out to Greg, the head coach, who's done a fantastic job of just developing edge talent up there.
That's amazing, right? Hey, let's do non-Bills, because thankfully we don't have to talk about the quarterback anymore, Emery. We did that for way too long here in Buffalo. I just read Tom Curran tweet that the Patriots are probably locked in on Drake May at 3 unless the Vikings or Giants give him an offer they can't refuse. So Williams, Daniels, May. Is that how you see the top three going here?
If I was predicting, yeah, that's how I would see it, going. You know, because at the end of the day, man, teams is really, and if I could just be completely honest, I would only feel comfortable taking two quarterbacks in round one, early in round one. That's the top two. That's Daniels and also, Caleb Williams. Everyone else, you kind of can make a case for them being more of a mid to late first round, but definitely second round type picks or talents. But, you know, we know how teams kind of overvalue quarterback and push them up the board. But if teams want to reset the market like they've done with every other position outside of the quarterback, you know, they need to start doing it in the draft.
Yeah. What do you think New England should do at 3? I feel like that's kind of where the draft, even though no one really knows what they're doing at 2, Washington either. But for New England, it feels like everything's kind of on the table. So if you were them, quarterback, they could just draft Harrison or move down, I guess.
Yeah, and that, if I were in charge of New England, this is Emory Hunt, the GM of the Patriots speaking, I would definitely probably trade down maybe 2 spots, but I worry about the Cardinals. Otherwise, I would just take Harrison. Then I would double back and just trade either into the first round, the back end, or just at the top of the second round, take Spencer Rattler. So that way I get an elite player right there at receiver. It didn't take a guy that reminds me a lot of Baker Mayfield that has been battle-tested throughout his career and would be ready to go from day one without spending a premium pick on a guy that we may not think is an elite talent at the position. Why not just get the elite talent, the top 5 talent, and then take a quarterback that can help us win in round 2?
All right, before we let you go, and then I'm going to let you promote your draft guide, you're the guy here that knows the deeper guys, the small school guys later in the draft. Brandon Bean actually has a nice history of wide receivers later. Khalil Shakir a couple years ago, obviously Gabe Davis in the 4th round several years ago. Give us a guy. If the Bills can get their hands on a guy, maybe the 4th round area, even a little bit later, you say, you know what? He's going to be able to play in this league and do some nice things. Wide receiver, that is.
I've been beating this drum for Kyle Sheets for forever since seeing him last season And then watching his progression this year out of Slippery Rock, 6'3", 220, ran high 4.4, low 4.5 at Temple's Pro Day, can play inside or outside, terrific deep ball threat, can track the ball rather well, can go above the rim, was highly productive at Slippery Rock and had a great college gridiron showcase against FBS corners in competition. So that would be my day three gem this year. Last year, I was all over Colton Dowell, UT Martin, who also starred at the college gridiron showcase. He ended up getting drafted in the 7th round by the Tennessee Titans. So I'm hoping Kyle Sheets follows suit because he is a terrific receiver.
I think you like Malachi Corley, too, if I remember right from the combine when I saw you.
Yeah, Corley, the receiver out of Western Kentucky, more of a that slot guy that can run with the ball. Also, John Giles of West Florida was a big fan of him too.
All right, I know that the draft guide's been out for a while, and anybody can get all the information. But it's even a great tool after the draft because you can learn about these guys that your favorite team drafted. So tell everybody all about the draft guide, how you go about getting it, where you can get it.
Absolutely, they can go to footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. This year, over 900 individual scouting reports, so every player in there has a scouting report. And if you've purchased the draft guide since 2020, right now you would have over 4,300 scouting reports in your hands as we speak. So it's the largest draft guide out there. All information, all filet, no fat, no list. It's all scouting reports. footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide.
footballgameplan.com. We always appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much for your time. Enjoy today. I know it's a big day for you, so we appreciate it, man.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
You got it. Emory Hunt right there. He knows his small school guys. You know, those where you find your gems, too, as he said, at wide receiver, right? I know he likes Malachi Corley a lot. A guy we haven't talked about a lot, Joe, is Javon Baker. Everybody I talk to likes Javon Baker. I think the question is, how much do teams really like him to take him maybe even in the 2nd round? Or is he a third-round guy? If you get to the 4th round, it might be just staring you in the face.
Yeah, I like him a lot. He gets open a lot. What's the thing with him? He has big drop problems, I think. I mean, I'll have to look. But of the class, he was one of the higher, maybe even had the highest drop rate. Let's see, drop percentage. Yeah, he was over 10%.
You know what his average yards a catch were last year?
No.
And this isn't just on 3 or 4 catches.
Yeah.
21.9. He averaged 22 yards a catch with 52 catches.
Well, that makes me think of a thing that we used to say with Gabe Davis, right? Which is Davis had a
same
higher
school.
Drop rate, and it is the same school too, but Davis would run such deep routes that are lower percentage chance, the drop rate would be a little bit higher. And maybe that's an explanation for Baker too, because I'm looking right now, and he does, of all the guys, like Franklin's at 10%. Let me make sure nobody else. No, Baker's 2nd. Jamari Thrash has the highest drop rate, but there's Baker right there, 2. Look, Odunze, right, by the way, the lowest at 3.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, geez, what did Emery just say? Odunze, he does everything so smooth. There's just nothing he doesn't do well, right?
I mean,
like everything he does, he's so smooth. You can drop him in any offense at any point, and he's just going to be a really good player for you, and that's why there's so much love for him, and it seems like even more love as we get closer to tonight. The draft starts tonight, 8 o'clock. We're going to have full coverage for you all day here. Of course, 7 o'clock tonight is when our draft coverage starts with Nate Geary and Zach Jones and Derek Kramer. I'm going to be down at One Bills Drive during that time. We'll have you fully covered here on WGR Sports Radio 550. In the meantime, we got a half hour left here on the program. A couple of things I want to do. I want to just walk through the division a little bit. Joe, you mentioned the Patriots. We had a Jets guest on. How about the Dolphins? Really interesting, some movement maybe on what the Dolphins might be thinking, and it might surprise some people where they may be leaning as well. And how about the trade scenarios? A couple more that I came up with that we'll see what your thoughts are here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Here's the thing. Minnesota, in my mind, is more desperate to get up there. Minnesota has more ammunition to get up there. Mm-hmm. But the Giants are within striking range of getting up there. So what in the end is more valuable? The more desperate team with more ammunition, or the team that's at 6, to where the Patriots could go from 3 to 6 and still get the quarterback that they want if they're not leapfrogged at 4 or 5?
Okay, that is Adam Schefter. I'm with Rich Eisen. The basic premise there is the Giants and the Vikings are both trying to get up to 3.
Mm-hmm.
which obviously is the spot where New England holds. And obviously, Joe, if you're doing that, you're doing it for a quarterback. Right. Now, I think the consensus is Williams and Daniels will go 1-2. So if the Giants and Vikings are both trying to do that, are we sure they're trying to get Drake May? Could it be for J.J. McCarthy? Because it has to be for a quarterback. You're not trading with New England. I guess you could leave open the possibility the Giants are doing it to get their hands on Marvin Harrison Jr. before he goes to four. You could do that too, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I would think, though, it's probably for a quarterback.
Right.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
May. I really do wonder what will happen with him tonight. Maybe it'll just be that when the college football season ended, he's the second guy. And there was even like a week maybe where it was, are we sure he's not number one? And then everyone went, no, yeah, he's not number one. But it was like it was a conversation for maybe a minute. And as the draft season has gone on longer and longer, I think the picking apart of May's game has strengthened. And now, like, Daniels is the favorite to go to, but everyone's not even sure about that. And there's rumors that New England hates Drake May. Again, those are just like rumors, but there's just weird stuff with him. So maybe the draft shows up and he goes 2, like we thought he would all along at the outset of draft season. Or maybe he slides. Maybe McCarthy would be the guy that someone is trading up for. I tend to think it would be May. This also reminds me of, did you see the Daniel Jeremiah tweet from last hour?
I did not.
He tweeted, was asked this question, what is the wildest top 10 rumor you've heard? And he said one thing he heard was an outcome where Minnesota would trade up from 11 to 3 with New England, and they would take Drake May. Then New England, who has just gone from 3 to 11, would trade back up from 11 to 4 with Arizona to draft McCarthy, and then Arizona would go from 11 to 5 and draft Marvin Harrison Jr. So the 11th pick would get passed around three times in the course of like a 10-minute span.
Didn't this kind of thing happen with Houston last year and how they finally ultimately positioned themselves where they were to get two picks?
Kind of. They didn't move out of 2, though. They just, what did they do? They had a second first, maybe that was at like 10, and they drafted Stroud at 2, and then they traded 10 or whatever that pick was, and then this year's first to move up back up to 3. So they ended up picking second and third.
Yes, that's what. And by the way, the only person who had that, I remember, is Daniel Jeremiah.
Okay.
Daniel Jeremiah is the only person I remember last year who, in his final mock that day, he's like, I got Houston picking second and third. And I'm like, that's kind of wild. Like, it's really kind of oddly specific. And it happened. So when Daniel Jeremiah talks, I kind of pay a little bit more attention now, right? And he actually has his final mock, and he has the Bills at 28 taking Brian Thomas Jr. So does Charles Davis, by the way, who I think is very plugged into the league. So we'll see what happens there. Now, I have at WGR550.com several different trade scenarios for the Bills trading up. And you can check those out, and we can talk about them. But we've also talked about them trading down. One thing I keep thinking about, and I wonder, and I've actually gone back and tried to see if this has happened, Joe. If a team wanted to move back into the first round, if there's a team who says, look, we really like the way the board's falling. We're sitting here in the second, or we're sitting here, we're not picking again until the second, or maybe the third. We got to get back up. What's the most the Bills could get to move out of the first round, right? And is it possible you could even get next year's first rounder from a team. I don't think so.
Ooh, yeah.
I don't think so. I think that's too much. But what I did find was this. In 2019, Indianapolis was picking 26th, not 28th, I get it, 26th. Washington came up from 46. They came up 20 spots, and they gave him next year's second rounder to do it.
Okay. So a late, well, mid second rounder and a future second rounder to get into the late first?
Yes. Now, yeah. I think that might be a little too late for the Bills to want to go back if they were to go into the mid-40s.
Yeah.
But boy, if they walked out of tonight and had three second rounders next year, you'd be like, holy cow. Like, they,
yeah,
three picks in the top, you know, I don't know, 50?
I really want them to use one of those seconds to get Brandon Ayuk.
Four? Actually, four picks, that would be. Oh, really? Yeah? Oh, man, the contract he would come with, though, you'd have to give him.
I know. I'm open to that, though. Like, I kind of, I'm not against that as an idea for them. And I guess, what was the, there was a thing up, there's so many, you know, there's so much trade wins to keep track of, draft wins to keep track of this morning. But there was something about Ayuk and how, I mean, this is probably true. I mean, if it's out there that the Niners want a first-round pick for Ayuk and he's still on the Niners, it would make sense that no one's offered him yet, because otherwise he wouldn't be on the team. But I wonder if they have to settle. I wonder if they have to make a decision. Like, okay, it's draft day. Nobody's offering us a first-round pick. So, because of the contract, right? And because of the class. The class is so deep, it might be harder to trade Brandon Ayuk when you have so many options in the draft. So do the Niners get to a spot today where they sit down and say, we have to make a decision. Do we want to pay this guy? Do we want to go into a lame duck year where he could be unhappy and we risk, you know, making it ugly and maybe even losing him for nothing at some point? Or C, do we take the second round pick plus? Because if the price drops because they realize no one's making the offer they want, Now I'm even more interested. If I can get him for a second round pick and something on top of that, maybe a fourth, maybe something a little more than that, and I've got the extra second that I got from Diggs, I almost feel like I'm swapping Diggs for Ayuk there, which I know the money will be there. It was for Diggs too, but I'm getting Diggs 6 years younger or 5 years younger, and that really, really appeals to me.
So here are a couple other trade possibilities I came up with teams that might want to do it and what it would cost Joe based on previous trades and the draft chart. The Rams at 19. We already talked, by the way, about the trade up all the way to number 9 for the with the Chicago Bears. Let's talk. Okay, you know what? Let me do this. Let me go to 12. I have one with 12 here. Now, 12 would depend on, this may depend on which guy you're getting, because you could, if Roma Dunze is gone, you're getting Brian Thomas probably at 12, I guess would be the target. But maybe Roma's there at 12, and he is there. This is what it looks like to me from what I've seen. The Bills would have to give up 28. They'd swap there. A fourth and next year's first. Would you do it?
One more time for me.
To go to 12.
Yeah.
They'd have to give up, obviously, their first. Also a fourth and next year's first.
And that's,
would you do it, and would it only have to be for Odunze?
It would have to be for Odunze. Yeah. I do not want to give up a first-round pick next year to go get Brian Thomas. I like Brian Thomas a lot, and I think he might be the most likely pick, but I do not want to trade multiple firsts for him.
Okay, well, in this next scenario, you wouldn't have to, but would this sit well with you? If it's 16 and Brian Thomas is there and the Bills say, let's go up, we're going to get him at 16, Seattle's there. What I have is the Bills would have to get to 16, give up 28, obviously. The Bills would also get a fourth rounder in this draft. So they'd get 16 and a fourth. But in return, they'd have to give up their second this year and a second next year.
Okay.
So one, 28 and a two, and next year's two for 16 and a four. For Brian Thomas.
Okay. I'm more interested. I'm kind of starting to like the idea of him just falling to 28, though. I'm starting to more and more.
You know, the issue here, though, is the only problem is if they give up 60, Joe.
Yep.
If the Bills give up 60, when are they picking again?
They're not picking until the fourth round.
Right.
They're not picking again until the fourth round, which, you know, you'll have 9 day 3 picks. This is where the volume of picks, you hope that you hit on three of them. But yeah, you're not picking till round four. And I would think that that would be very scary, I think. And, you know, maybe they would have Thomas that much higher. There are some that do. But I don't know. More and more you're seeing mocks where he's fallen till the end of the first round. You just mentioned Daniel Jeremiah has him falling to 28. So I'm starting to... My favorite idea for Thomas is you are trading like a fourth round pick and you're going up three spots. Like, to me, that is the ideal scenario in which they get Thomas. I would be hesitant to go big, even if you're not having to give up your first round pick next year.
Well, I think the most likely scenario there for me is, and I only go up to 20. I don't have him going up just a few spots. I have him going to the last one I did was going up to 20 with the Pittsburgh Steelers, eight spots up. That's your scenario, but it would also require next year's second. It would be a fourth this year and next year's second. So if they get to 20, the Bills are sure he's going to not fall much farther. We got to get him now. Would you do that? Give up this year's fourth with the swap and next year's second.
I could be convinced of that. Yes, I think I could be talked into that.
The Bills do have 2 seconds next year. Obviously, one is the Minnesota Vikings, as we talked about. That might be what you have to use as your capital. That Vikings pick should be higher than what the Bills pick next year. In the meantime, the New England Patriots, we said draft and pick third. They're scheduled for that. The Jets, we had a guest on earlier at 10. And then the Miami Dolphins are sitting there at 21. And there's a lot of buzz now, Joe, about the Dolphins in the wide receiver market. I don't know if you've seen this, but it looks like Brian Thomas Jr., Xavier Worthy. They want to replace the speed they eventually will lose with either Tyreek Hill and or Jalen Waddle as, you know, their contracts get to points where they got to make decisions.
Yeah, and I saw Omar Kelly and Alan Pupar talking on a podcast yesterday. They were talking how the Dolphins did not restructure the contract of Tyreek Hill this offseason, despite the fact it would have cleared a ton of room for them, and they could have maybe kept, maybe not Christian Wilkins, but they could have kept somebody else important that they lost because there were so many that they did. But they didn't. They didn't touch Tyreek Hill's contract, and Tyreek Hill has been on the record 1 year ago. He said on a podcast that his plan is to play out this contract, and after 2025, walk away. That's it. That's all I want to play. And if that were true, I do feel like the Dolphins would then have not acted on the contract. So maybe it lines up that Hill will play 2 more years. And if that's the case, I mean, isn't Mike McDaniel in an office right now going, man, I'm just give me Xavier Worthy. Give me Xavier Worthy.
Oh, okay, listen, I approach this from two ways, thinking about the Dolphins, okay? Number one is, yeah, I mean, boy, you know, I'll restate it this way. If the Dolphins take a wide receiver, that's one less for the Bills to take, which sucks. Okay, I wouldn't like it for that reason. They take Brian Thomas Jr., they take Xavier Worthy, it's one less receiver, it's one more off the board, okay, that really makes it harder for the Bills. But, Joe, I got to be honest. Go ahead, Miami. What? It's not like you can be any faster or have more weapons. Like, go ahead. Where's he going to play? I mean, I know they had a couple injuries last year and that they had to deal with that. But Miami, if Miami takes Brian Thomas Jr. or Xavier Worthy, it does nothing to enhance them to me and what I feel about them.
Right. I hear that.
They already are who they are.
Yeah. I can't decide. If I kind of, I guess I'm kind of neutral on it, right? Which I guess kind of means I'm not afraid of it. You're right. You've already got Hill. You've already got Waddle. I expect they're going to pay Waddle. So you add Worthy. I do think he'd help them right away. I think one area of depth they were severely lacking last year was when Hill was banged up and Waddle was missing time, they had nobody else to come in and pass the ball to. Like, they tried Chase Claypool at one point because they were so desperate. They didn't have much. So that would help them, but what did I just kind of describe? A depth role, right? Like, that's a team that has more holes than the Bills do on their roster this year.
So you got to get a guy who can play.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't doubt for a second that McDaniel would use Worthy and he would have big numbers. But to me, you are drafting a number three receiver with your first-round pick, and you don't have a lot of draft capital in the first place. To me, you're making a luxury pick on a team that can't afford to be making luxury picks.
And they just had a whole big exodus on their defensive side of the ball. They have a brand new defensive coordinator. I have them actually going offense taking Graham Barton because I just think he fits for them. He's a really, really good player, flexible. Their offensive line was so decimated with injuries last year. He can play guard, he can play tackle, he can play center, he can do a lot of different things. That's why I have him. But man, they could be in the offensive tackle market, and why wouldn't they look at defensive line, the Miami Dolphins? I mean, they are a team that they lost Christian Wilkins, and you have Bradley Chubb coming off injury. You have Jalen Phillips coming off injury. So I, as much as I see this wide receiver stuff with Miami, I'm like, okay, I don't think that's smart. I guess, I mean, add another guy, a weapon, but that's not what you need, and you're in a position where you got to win right now. It's the NFL draft. It's so fun. It's the first day and night tonight, 8 o'clock, our coverage at 7 o'clock, but of course, all day here on WGR. We'll take one final timeout. We'll come back, and when we come back, it must be NHL playoff season because we have coaches talking about opposing teams' players. All right, last night in the NHL playoffs, the Maple Leafs, their fans were feeling very good about themselves about midway through the third period. They had tied up the game. Todd Bertuzzi scores. It's 2-2. The series is tied 1-1. Here we go. 28 seconds later, Brad Marchand scores. And that was the game winner because he scored again at an empty netter a little bit later. Joe, did you see their kind of their back and forth? I didn't even want to call it a dust-up. What was happening between Marchand and Bertuzzi last night?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the TV was maybe even showing them for a minute and just in time showed the goal. And what are Leaf fans are upset that the whistle wasn't blown, basically.
Well,
and the coach said
not only Leafs fans. Let's hear from Leafs head coach Sheldon Keefe. This is what he said after the game for everybody's favorite guy to talk about, Brad Marchand.
In the league long enough, as you can see, he gets calls. It's unbelievable, actually, you know, how it goes. You know, we got to play through that. You got to play through that stuff. I don't think there's another player in this series that gets away with taking up Bertuzzi's legs the way that he does. There's not one other player in the series that gets away with that, but he does. It's an art, and he's elite at it.
It's an art, and he's elite at it. I mean, he is speaking the truth there, right?
He is. He's not mentioning that his guy on that play, Bertuzzi, is like the same exact thing. Gets away with stuff like that all the time. He punched a guy. Was it a saber? He punched a saber in the face, like, late in the season, and nothing happened. So, but he's also right. Like, that's definitely Marchand to a T.
Also, last night, the LA Kings in overtime beat the Oilers 5-4.
Yeah.
Anze Kopitar, great shot. How do you let that happen in overtime? He just kind of walked in a little bit, almost free, not quite. That happens in overtime. And then the Vegas Golden Knights, they win 3-1. They take a commanding 2-0 series lead over Dallas. How about Dallas? The number one team in the West could be out very quickly here.
And Vegas, who is the final seed in the Western Conference, is now the betting favorite to win the Western Conference.
Wow. Eichel had an amazing pass last night, a 2-on-1.
Yeah.
Was it Marchessault who scored, I think, if I was watching?
I believe so, yeah. And then Eichel had maybe the empty netter, goal and assist last night, yeah.
Yeah. Well, here we go again, watching Jack Eichel do his thing for Vegas. In the meantime, NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs, and, of course, the draft tonight. All right, here we go. It's here. We'll have reaction tomorrow. In the meantime, you got Sabres Live up next, One Bills Live, lots of stuff from them today, and, of course, Chopin the Bulldog. And then our draft coverage continues all night long here on WGR.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.